Hello and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And Jem, I know you've got a topic you want to talk about this week, but I've just got a little rant that I want to sneak in. I've not told
you. Okay, off we go.
So this will surprise you. It's just something that, basically, it's something I was going to mention last week when we were talking about history TV programs, and then I realised we weren't talking about documentaries. But it was something that wound me up the other night in a TV program, and so I just wanted to have a little on-air rant about it, because I was watching a back-to-back, one of the, I think it was Yesterday Channel or something, you know, channel hopping over Christmas, and they were having a dinosaur marathon. And you know, Jem, that, you know, I do the fossil hunts and everything. We like dinosaurs in this household. So we thought we'd watch this marathon of dinosaur programs, and it was a very American sort of dinosaur program. You know, it was two teams of fossil hunters both trying to answer this question. And, you know, it had that American. And I could live with all of that. And it was interesting. It was great. And then there was one bit that started to niggle on us, because they started to talk about these 60 tyrannosaurs that they'd found. And then they cut away to another person talking about Tyrannosaurus rex. And then they come back to these 60 tyrannosaur skeletons they'd found. And we're sitting there, and my future sister-in-law mentions the fact that, well, hold on, there are only something like 12 or so complete Tyrannosaurus rex skeletons found in the world. And eventually, at one point, somebody drops in the word Albertosaurus to describe these 60 skeletons. These are not skeletons of Tyrannosaurus rex. They're an entirely different type of dinosaur. Tyrannosaur is kind of the overarching name. And it niggled me a lot, and I just wanted to have a little rant. And I say I was going to do it last week, but I'll do it today. I want to have a little rant, because historians, and especially historical television, ought to be trying to get facts across. And what this TV series had obviously decided to do was they'd obviously decided Tyrannosaurus rex is a big dinosaur that we all know about. And they've obviously gone to all the historians that they're speaking to and all the paleontologists and said, just refer to them as tyrannosaurs. They're sort of in that, you know, they've gone, okay, they're tyrannosaurs, and they've used that word. But then they've intercut this with people talking about Tyrannosaurus rex. And so although they never actually directly say, that's a Tyrannosaurus rex there, they're kind of giving this impression that you're watching a program about an entirely different type of dinosaur to what you are. And it just set me off, and I just wanted to have a little on-air rant. And something to think about, when you're talking about history, you have to be specific, and I don't like the fact that they were doing it basically like some sort of strange reality show or something like that, where they're deliberately, and it was a very deliberate decision, to miscut and, you know, take out of context different things to give you the wrong impression. It felt more like I was watching a political show than a history show. And then I started, you know, sort of looking at a couple of other historical documentaries, and I noticed actually that this happens more often than I expected it to. So just at the start, you know, start of this podcast, I just wanted to have that little rant, Jim. I hope you don't mind with me leaping in with a rant.
No,
to start with,
but that's absolutely fine. And I think that, you know, again, sort of referring back to last week, if it's a drama, you're allowed a certain level of creative lying, let's call it that. But if it's a documentary, you need to get your facts straight. That people assume that you've done your research, you've done your homework, and particularly if you've got, like, written underneath some guy's name, like Professor of Paleontology from the University of Birmingham, you'd think that they know the difference between a Tyrannosaurus rex and an Albertosaurus. So yeah, that's shame on them. But yeah, unfortunately, you do get stuff like that.
Yeah, and what really niggled me with it was the fact that they clearly had done their research, because everything everyone said was correct. It was just the way that obviously in the edit they decide to cut it together to mislead you. It would be like us deciding to have a conversation about, you know, a few weeks ago we talked about William the Conqueror, and then you deciding to drop into that a few sentences about another King William and saying, well, King William did blah 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 blah, and just leaving everyone to assume that was all part of William the Conqueror. But anyway, my rant is done. We had an actual topic you wanted to talk about today, I do know that.
Hi, and welcome to the new version of this podcast, Greg Rants at Things.
There's nothing new about that. I've used this as therapy before now.
I think we both have. And actually, we're going to kind of continue that as a theme, because in the year 2017, there was an unnecessary controversy about statues commemorating Confederate soldiers in World War II, I was about to say. Wow, that is weird. In the US Civil War is what I mean. And it sort of bled out from there. And, you know, Rebecca Rydeal, who we had on the podcast last year, she sort of had this sort of impassioned piece on Twitter about how, you know, people aren't allowed to, there seems to be an official line and people aren't allowed to deviate from that. And actually the area of historical debate and discussion seems to be crushed by some spurious groups who seem to think that they alone have the right to know what truth is. Now, to be clear, an awful lot of the Confederacy statues were built way after the US Civil War, and therefore they aren't ancient relics that should be cherished. Also, you have to think about what these statues symbolize. So, the people who were backing the Confederacy wanted the United States to no longer be united. They were creating sedition, if you want to be technical. This is not something to be celebrated, just as you're not going to see lots of statues to the English soldiers of the Revolutionary War, because they didn't want America to be America either. So, you know, I don't have a problem with tearing down a statue that's only 50 years old, was basically built, and there was a bit of a peak in the 1960s to sort of be as a counter to the civil rights movement. That's just all kinds of wrong to stick up a statue. You're also putting history 100 years later onto a statue from 100 years ago. And also, these guys may have been brave, but they were fighting for a breaking away of America and also the continuation of slavery. But the most famous counterexample of that is there were some people in Britain saying, well, using that logic, we should absolutely take down Nelson's column, because did you know Nelson was pro-slavery? And this is where it falls to pieces, because Nelson's column is not about Nelson's personal point of view. It's about him being a very effective Royal Navy commander, and the big frescoes at the bottom have got nothing to do with slavery and everything to do with the fact that he fought a number of key naval battles against France during the Napoleonic Wars that absolutely sort of saved Britain, and he ultimately gave his life to victory against France. This is something so showing that he is very much pro-Britain. He was very brave as well. But, you know, if half the statue was about, oh, by the way, he thought slavery was okay, then I would have no problem tearing down Nelson's column, because that's wrong. That's all kinds of wrong, and we need to challenge that. But that's not what Nelson's column is. But we seem to be getting the idea that if anybody had an idea that's unsavory by modern standards, then we should ignore that person, tear down their statue, not mention them at all. And that's just not how history works. So you've had your little opening shot about dinosaurs. There was my opening shot of the scenario. What are your initial views?
Well, this gets really, really difficult very quickly. To kind of leave Nelson's column just out of the way for a moment and move it over to something directly comparable in my mind, to kind of make your same point but something a bit, imagine we're in a town in America and they've got a statue of a Confederate soldier put there 50 years ago, you know, sort of fighting the Confederate War, right next to a statue of George Washington. Now, George Washington kept slaves, but there's no way you're going to look at those two statues and say, well, they're both pro-slavery, let's tear down both statues. It's, you know, to me, that is kind of a very clear dividing line between, you know, one of those Confederate statue is, although not directly about slavery, that was part of what that fighting was for. However, as soon as I start thinking of tearing down statues, in my mind goes to the Soviet Union ripping down statues. My mind goes immediately to the, you know, and this is entirely, I am going to be guilty straight away of Godwin's law here, I must be honest. My mind goes straight away to book burnings.
Nazis. Yeah.
And my mind goes straight away to Tutankhamun and all of the fact that he was, you know, he was obliterated from, you know, his name was obliterated from statues and all sorts of things. Now, once we're into a world of ripping down and destroying statues and things like that, once we get into that particular state, suddenly we're in a very difficult place of we are deliberately destroying history. Now, as you say, there's a difference between a statue that's put up 50 years ago and one that was put up, you know, in immediately in the aftermath of the Civil War or during the Civil War to commemorate it. Now, that is... But I just feel a little bit uneasy once we start destroying statues. Now, that doesn't mean at the same time that I think it has to be on display. There was a place I worked for a few years ago. This wasn't a place I performed. This was a place I was working as a shop staff member. I won't actually name the place because, you know. And they had on their wall a big poster about the history of... I can't remember if it was the history of the family that the company built or if whether it was the history of the building that the shop is now in. But they had a big poster up on the wall and it was just, it, lots of family history and stuff and lots of interesting information. But one of the things they had on that poster was they had this image of the family's decorative coat of arms. Coat of arms is the best way I can describe it. I believe the coat of arms only applies to what's actually on the shield. But this was kind of one of those big decorative versions with all the other things around it. And one of the things on that coat of arms, on that display, you know, obviously it was there for historical significance, but one of the things on it was part of that coat of arms were two slaves tied up in chains linked to the coat of arms. And that's clearly, you know, it was clearly pointing out this family, you know, I took it to be part of their money comes from the slave trade, and it was that link, the same as, you know, you might put a blacksmith anvil or something else on it. And this was a very clear image. And it was pointed out to me by... It was one of the funny things is, it was pointed out to me after I'd been there about a month and a half, and then there was suddenly this big hoo-ha with everybody suddenly realising. Everyone had walked past this poster every day and never really paid any attention to it. I'd read some of the history. I'd never looked really at the pictures. And to me, that's something else entirely. That is a historical thing. But should that particular image, which clearly could be seen as offensive, there's no question that that is an image celebrating slavery on a coat of arms, should that be on display in a museum? Possibly yes. Should that be on display in a shop? Probably no. Should that be on a display as part of a historical display within a shop, or should it be taken down? That's another question entirely. And then the question is, if you take it down, should it be destroyed? And I think that's the thing with these statues is, should they be on display where they are? Should they be on display in a museum? Should they be destroyed altogether? I think that to me is the three options, and that is where it starts to get confusing.
Yeah. Well, it's context ultimately. The other one that sort of stirred me onto this was there was a complaint about the National Archives. You know, that's about as sort of historically noteworthy and safe, dare I say it, even a little bit dull. But at the Keeper's Gallery National Archives in 2017, they had a whole display. Actually, it was a display which went a few years back from that, but it was a display about the British Empire. And if you want to talk about something where there clearly needs to be debate about it, you know, the whole of the British Empire was never good, and the whole of the British Empire was never bad. And also, you have to put it into the context of countries had empires. That was just a thing. And it was, you know, saying, well, we should never have taken this country when we could have. That would be insane, because then France would have taken it or whatever. So anyway, but the complaint was that the exhibition was decidedly one-sided. It was basically that the British Empire was was a terrible thing. And one of the most disingenuous things, and I can't believe that the curator allowed this through, is there is a black and white photo from 1868 of HMS Daphne, and on its deck are literally hundreds of black slaves. And just written underneath it was HMS Daphne carrying slaves. So you assume that this is a slave ship that, you know, is this is a horrific image of British imperialism perpetrating slavery. But that's not what the photo is of. Slavery had already been abolished for decades in the British Empire. And what HMS Daphne had done is they had just saved these slaves from other slavers and were returning them to free life. So that is just outright lying. You know, that just, by not putting any of that in, it just looks like, ooh, look at the evil British slavers. Whereas actually, these are great guys who actually put their lives on the line fighting for the fact that slavery should be abolished and these men are all these slaves are about to have free lives again. And that's the stuff that's really dangerous. But on top of that, you just people don't seem to be able to have a conversation about this. We mentioned ages ago, sorry, just one more. We mentioned ages ago how I was saying, I think, you know, it's uncomfortable. You know, we should, Holocaust deniers, we should just, you know, not give them a platform. And you made the valid comment going, no, I want to know who the Holocaust deniers are because those are the people I want to make sure aren't teaching my children. You know, get your point of view out and then we can stop you from spreading your lies. And I think that, you know, these are very extreme examples, but there needs to be debate. You know, the... You know, I'm just trying to randomly pick something. You know, British Imperial India. You know, yes, there were horrific things happened, but that's not the same thing as saying that everything the British did in British Imperial India was terrible and awful and, you know, it was just a series of white-on-brown crimes.
Yeah, Okay, I'm going to pick up on a few of your little threads there. First one, thank you for actually managing to make my rant about dinosaurs at the beginning of this podcast relevant.
Do what I can.
By bringing up the question of that picture with that caption underneath. And, you know, the caption is technically accurate if it says slave ship. It's a ship full of slaves, but it doesn't tell the full story. And as you say, it's deliberately misleading. The second thing about the destruction of statues and things like that is one thing that worries me if we start destroying statues and we start destroying any history at all is there's a lovely moment in Family Guy, the cartoon series, where they're on a visit to Germany and they're doing the open bus tour of Berlin, I think it is, and they're driving around, they're saying, and this happened here and this happened here. And then they get to the point where they suddenly go, and then between 1939 and 1945, absolutely nothing happened. And if we start destroying, you know, if we start saying, right, so let's take the Confederate statues to start with. If we start destroying any record of the Confederacy, any statues of them, any imagery of them, because we don't want to be influenced by that imagery, then all we're doing is destroying history. And it is important that we learn this stuff. We do remember that stuff. Now, that's obviously different from putting it on display and, as you say, context. And when we're talking about... you said there about Holocaust denial. When we're talking about statues, the way that that would relate to me personally is I think there has to be a fundamental difference between public land and private land as well. Because one of my big things is, you know, can we, you know, do we need to start controlling this stuff? And yes, if you've got a statue up somewhere public, then you've got this question of, well, hold on, this land is owned by everyone. Is this statue something that, you know, represents people? Is this something people want? Something like that. If somebody wants to take one of these, any one of these statues, really, and put it in their private land... And this is where, you know, sort of the shop I did work in that had this picture on the wall. If someone goes into that shop and people go into that shop and they see this picture and they see that picture as representative of that shop, they decide not to shop there. You know, it's very, very simple. You know, if that's the image the shop has chosen to put on the wall. If you go to somebody's house and they have a great big statue endorsing slavery in their front garden, that's going to give you a very big clue very quickly about whether or not you want to, you know, sort of be friends with this person. I would imagine, well, it certainly would give me that sort of clue. However, I you know, that person, they should be able to put that statue up, and then you can actually use that as, you know, sort of this. However, if that person then petitioned to put that up in a public place, that's a bit different. And we get this, you know, this thing always crops up year after year about, you know, Christmas time and nativity scenes, especially in America, about where should you be allowed to put up even something as simple as a nativity scene. And again, always to me, everything like this comes down to whether it's private or public, because I still think that the way we actually solve all the problems is understanding. You know, if everyone keeps hidden and everyone pulls down every statue and we drive things underground, and you know, you're not going to stop people, you know, following Confederate ideas by destroying a statue. You're just going to move them underground. Whereas that doesn't, not the same thing as meaning you have to have it there. However, as we've said again, it comes down to intent as well. What is the intent behind that statue, and what is the imagery behind a particular statue or a particular image? Nelson, when you see Nelson, your mind does not go, Nelson, slavery. That's not the first thing that leaps into your head. You know, there are people where that would be true. And I think that has to be a key factor when you're even beginning to decide which statues we even need to debate about.
Well, yes, but just sort of broadening it out, if you try and pick somebody from history who has modern sensibilities about everything, we ain't going to have a statue of anybody up. You know, your Winston Churchill is largely considered to be, well, I mean, he won the Greatest Britain's poll, and, you know, he's a go-to person in terms of great leader in British modern history. But he was an imperialist. He was racist. You know, not in the sense of using sort of terrible ethnic slurs, but this is a man who genuinely thought the British Empire should sort of continue, and that Gandhi was an agitator, because from his point of view, he was an agitator. But anyway, that, you know, but those are unsavory statements to be made now. But he wasn't particularly unusual for the age. So, you know, I think we have to recognize that if we put up a statue of anybody, we're putting up a statue of a human being and all their frailties as well. You know, maybe they were misogynistic or homophobic or whatever, because in those societies, nobody talked about those things, and it was always assumed to be bad, for want of a better phrase. We are now in 2018, and do you know what? We should do a podcast at some point on the fact that this is now the 100th year anniversary of women getting the vote in Britain, although you had to be over 30. You know, is it any surprising that if somebody grew up before that, you might think, well, women aren't quite up to the political task, which is a horrifically sexist thing to say now. But in the context of, let's say, 1800, you would have thought poor people didn't have the right to vote. So, you know, but you then go off and die in battle, and you gave your all for your country. Maybe we should, you know, I guess in a way, we should be remembering the best of people with their, you know, a statue or commemoration. But some of these people are decidedly dubious. Like Cecil Rhodes is a classic one. Cecil Rhodes, if you don't know, real imperialist. He set up Rhodesia, which is now modern-day Zimbabwe, by massacring the local populations. He was completely amoral. It was all about the bottom line. And yet there are statues up by him, because he was so fabulously wealthy, he made sure that he was remembered in various sites around Britain. And, you know, should we tear those down? Probably yes, because, again, back to your context, we should know about Cecil Rhodes in the context of Victorian imperialism. Should we have a statue of him hanging, you know, in the middle of a park, and everyone thinks, oh, he must have been a good guy? No, because there's no context there whatsoever.
Yeah, and I think the trouble we've got here, Jim, is that we're out of time. I'm going to be honest with
you.
As
always.
And we haven't solved this basic problem, but let's be completely honest with ourselves, Jim. We never thought we were going to actually solve this problem today.
No.
Most podcasts, we've brought up examples, we've brought up issues, and the trouble is, along with so many of these issues, it is a case by case thing. There is no way that you can ever do it. And I think that the problem that we both have with this is people who basically get decide they want to have one set of rules about what is acceptable and what's not, and have a very simple ruling. There's our line. Those go, these stay. And really, that's not what the world is like. Every single statue, every single piece of art, every historical thing we're discussing is a grey area. You know, it's not, you know, how long has it been there? All these different things that we discuss to give things context, I think mean that there isn't a single answer covering every single work of art, every single historical statue, every single inscription in the world.
Yeah, couldn't have put it better myself, yes.
In which case, I think it's time for our plugs.
Okay, well, I'm going to plug my new book. I believe we're going to be doing an interview about that. So that's The Sultans, and this is my first full history book since Deus Vult. So it's just out in hardback. It's available, and it's published through Ambly Publishing, so you can go onto Ambly's website, you can go into an actual bookshop and order it, you can go through Condensed Histories. There are loads of different places you can get it, but really excited about this book. You'll be hearing more about it later on, but it's out now.
And I'm going to just plug once again, please go to www.thelastairship.com and go and watch my steampunk web series. But I'm also going to do my standard plug about supporting creators. And this week specifically, as Jem says, he's got a new book out. And, you know, yes, go online, get Jem's book, if you've read any of Jem's other books. But also, please, if you read it and you enjoy it, think of the amount of time Jem took writing his book. And then think about how long it would take you just to write a quick review of the book as well. And that will really help him. And as Jem says, if you want to go into a proper, you know, bricks and mortar bookshop, if you're out on the high street, rather than going to Amazon, if you go into bookshops and start asking for copies of books, then they're more likely to stock that book and more people get to see it. So if you're supporting authors as well, then do go into bookshops and ask for copies of their books. Try and buy them real. That helps more people see them. But yes, support the podcast. If you haven't already done so, I know I'm being a bit of a nag about the podcast reviews, but if you get a chance to go on and leave our podcast a little review on whichever podcast app you're listening to this on, then that would be absolutely fantastic. But for now, though, we're at the end of the episode, so a massive thank you to my wonderful, wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem Deducci.
And a wonderful co-host of mine, Greg Chapman. I say to you, au revoir.
And I will be back next week with my special guest talking about his new book from the sounds of it. But for now, goodbye and take care.